From the Windows, Doors, and More Studios, your one-stop shop for all your kitchen and bath needs. The Pat Miller Program. WoWo, 92.3 FM and 1190 AM. Depend on it.
And welcome back to this, our second hour of the Pat Miller Program here on this Saturday. Very glad to have you. Very glad to have our guest. I get to talk to him, I don't know, maybe once a month. Not often enough, but always glad when he fills us in on what's happening with him. It's the Attorney General for the State of Indiana, Todd Rokita. Mr. Rokita, good afternoon to you, my friend.
Hey, Pat. Great to be with you again. Yeah, it's not enough. I have to... I keep reminding myself to bug you to get on. So you're so popular, no matter what day of the week you're on. You know, it's hard to get time with my friends. So yeah, glad you're okay. Glad you're doing well.
Doing very well. Thank you very much, sir. And you're doing very well. I want to talk about the fact that you are again leading the charge for the people of Indiana. And here's the thing that I find. I consider myself a news junkie. I'm fairly up on what happens around our city, our state, and obviously the country. And then I find some things, like, for example, with your office, and I'm like, I didn't really know he was fighting that fight. And I'm talking now about the PFAS, and these are these drugs, these substances that are in our system more than we realized, causing health difficulties for many of us, and you're taking on the chemical manufacturers. What brought you into this fight, and who is it you're going after right now?
Well, thanks, Pat. I appreciate you noticing our work. We do have our hands in a lot. It's an amazing office. We have amazing people. They could be making a lot more money. I've told you this before elsewhere. And they do this because they just have public service in their heart, and they're good at what they do. It's really something else. These are not your typical government bureaucrats at all. So what we put our attention to really now over the last couple of years to gather evidence is the manufacturers of what we call PFAS. Now, the technical name for PFAS is polyfluorokill. So that's is about enough to kill you right there. So we simplify it by saying PFAS. The thing about PFAS chemicals is that they, even better name for them is forever chemicals. They don't break down. They resist grease, oil, water, heat, you know, all the things that would naturally, even if it's a bad substance, would cause it to end after a certain amount of time. These chemicals stick around forever. They're found everywhere now. See, they've been going on. They were invented back in the 1920s or something like that, and they've taken on a higher profile over the decades. Our lawsuit, not exclusively, but focuses a lot, for example, on the firefighting foam that's used at airports and other government facilities and that all our firefighters for decades have used. And of course we love our first responders. We do anything for them.
Absolutely.
And we have to, and so what our angle of this lawsuit is, right? I'm limited. I just can't be everyone's attorney, but I can be the attorney. Well, what I am is the attorney for the state. And what I do enforce is Indiana's deceptive consumer sales practices. That's a statute. And what we're arguing then, under my jurisdiction and my enforcement of that statute, is that the manufacturers, Pat, of these PFAS chemicals, these forever chemicals, knew that they were toxic, knew that they caused cancer, infertility, child development problems, all kinds of things, and then didn't tell anybody, right? The deceptive part of their act or omission. And so that's what this lawsuit focuses on. And it's just the manufacturers of these chemicals. Now, downstream in the supply chain, these chemicals were used in different products, utensils, for example, that you find in your home, other things. Now, we're not focused, and we don't have the capacity to focus on the subsequent manufacturers of products that use these chemicals. We're going after the chemical makers themselves. And again, it's about what they knew, when they knew it, and the fact that they didn't tell anybody.
Well, and the part in one of the articles I read where you're quoted, the comment that told me, I've got to call Todd and get him on here and talk about this, and I'm quoting you now, we're taking action today to hold these companies accountable for their clear violation of laws designed to protect human health. For decades, they sought to hide research showing that their products were extremely dangerous to people everywhere, including Hoosiers, and they did so so they could make million-dollar profits at the cost of our health and well-being. So for whatever reason these things were created, whatever products they were supposed to enhance, whatever, these companies knew early on, Mr. Attorney General, there was something wrong in what they had and what they were doing, and they not only went ahead with it, but they hid it.
Yep.
That's unbelievable to me.
That's a part of this. Yeah, and that's a clear. So when I say clear violation, I mean a clear violation of our Deceptive Consumer Practices Act. And that's what's happening here. Now, they'll try to remove it to federal court. There's for a lot of these lawsuits. We're not the first state to do this. About half the states have done this so far. And we might have to fight them in federal court. We're prepared to do that. We also use outside counsel a lot of times. And sometimes the news wants to make a big deal about that. And so this is an effort where not only do my internal employees work this issue, but we've hired outside attorneys as well, who don't get paid unless it's one of those deals. We don't get paid unless we win, the state wins. So we're not out any money. But we have a outside counsel, but still an Indiana firm, Taft Law Firm, here in Indianapolis that has particular expertise with these PFAS manufacturers. And so they're prepared to add some real expertise and teeth to what we're doing.
Yeah, I was the other thing about the article that stunned me, sir. We're talking to Attorney General Todd Rokita from Indianapolis, and thanks for being with us on this Saturday. But one of the things
from Indianapolis, don't do that to me. Lake County and Brownsburg.
Oh, are you? There you go. Here's one of the things that got me. PFAS exposure has been linked to cancer, infertility, and childhood development. And then the next line just hit me right between the eyes. National blood sampling by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has found PFAS in the blood of nearly every person tested since 1999. So I might have enough in me now. I may not be getting cancer yet, but the PFAS is in me. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, because it's disseminated throughout our society and throughout our environment for decades. This has been around since the late 1920s, like I said. So I don't want to be alarmist either. You know, we've lived with this chemical for a while. And this, a couple things, Pat. This lawsuit, as it goes, you know, these are long baseball games, and we're in the top of the first. And I can already tell this lawsuit is going to be what we call a battle of the experts. They're going to, you know, we're going to have experts that say, hey, the concentration, you know, in our environment is way too high. And the other side is going to say, oh, no, we can live with that just fine. We didn't cause the cancer. We didn't cause this. We didn't cause that. The concentration is too low.
Right.
And that battle will go on. But, you know, there's other aspects to this, too. And while this goes on, I don't want to be alarmist. You know, when I do interviews like this, you and others, I don't want to scare people until there's reason to be scared. Now, what do I mean by that? Coincidentally, because you know I don't coordinate with the federal EPA basically on anything, I'm usually suing them for government overreach. But coincidentally, Pat, the same day we filed this lawsuit, they came out with their final rules regarding standards for testing your water, which is the main way this stuff gets into our bodies and things like that. It leaches from landfills. It leaches from airports that use the fire foam or a burned building that use the fire foam, leaches into the groundwater and then gets into us. And that's a lot of the ways the CDC is finding it in our blood. And a lot of the reason the CDC is finding it in our blood. So, what should Hoosiers do? Go test your water. The rules that have come out have set standards for how much PFAS is they think is good or bad.
Right.
And they've given funding. It's not even an unfunded mandate, which is why I'm supportive of it in that sense. It's one of those silly infrastructure bills that have recently been passed. There is some money for PFAS testing in drinking water. So your utility company, your water company could be using those funds to test. A lot of water companies will come out to your home and test for free. Get the test of your water done. If you're in at a well, get that done and see what you're dealing with first. And by the way, if you have a bad test, send it to me. Send it to your Indiana Attorney General's office. That is actually valuable evidence for us.
Okay, that's a great idea. Let me do one other thing, too, if I could, Mr. Attorney General, because we're full-blown into election mode around here, as I'm sure you realize. You are now officially filed for re-election this year for the office you currently hold. It's a little different how you get on the November ballot as opposed to, for example, the people up here in the 3rd District running for that congressional office where they go through a primary. You don't get placed on the ballot as the result of a primary. If I'm remembering correctly, when all of the delegates from around Indiana meet for the state convention, they will cast ballots, and I think there's like 3 offices that they do that for, and yours is one of them. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Very good civics lesson, Pat. So first of all, let me just say, all things considered, this is serving the people of Indiana has been the highest honor of my life. And in this particular job, we have done a lot, and we've been successful and very effective, and I want to continue doing it. My wife jokingly says, you know, Todd, you finally found a job in politics that fits your personality. I don't know what she means by that, but I'll take it as a compliment, I think. And anyway, we're doing a lot and want to continue that effort. So we are.
Yep.
We want to go before the people of the state and ask them for their vote and ask them for a grade on how we did.
While you're sitting there, let me brag on your office for a minute. You've had a 100% success rate in jury trials where you defend interests for the state of Indiana, over $1 billion in legal settlements to taxpayers in 3 years, which, by the way, is a state record, a significant appellate court win, keeping criminals behind bars. These two, I think, are huge, considering some of the stories we have, helping shut down a Chinese Communist Party-funded Confucius Institute in Indiana. We don't need more China in the Hoosier State. We need to do that, shut that thing down, and then we need to go after farms and other properties that they've bought and reverse those sales. Safeguarding women's sports from unfair male competition. Can you believe how nutty that has gotten?
It's terrible. And this week, we won the BMV case. Gubernatorial candidate Curtis Hill brings this up a lot on the campaign trail. He's a former attorney general right before me, and he's exactly right. He started the fight to stop our BMV from offering an option of X on our driver's license.
Yeah.
Right? You got male, you got female, and then for these others, there's an X. No, there are 2 sexes, meaning there are 2 genders, and it's called male and female. We just won that case this week in the Indiana Court of Appeals. And, of course, we've upheld what the General Assembly did correctly, which was make illegal, because it really is child abuse, sex change surgeries on minors and hormone treatment on minors.
Well, yeah, and the list just never ends, creating the Parent Bill of Rights. You've always defended Second Amendment rights, which is huge to a lot of us here, constitutional-loving Hoosiers, and you're right in there fighting for us. And that's part of what it is that I think sets you apart. I don't really I don't want to put a chamois on you here, but I don't think you're in much difficulty when you get to the convention. I think that the delegates will certainly put you up again, and you will be reelected again. We appreciate you being with us today. You are the person who has won more votes in a statewide election in the history of the state, and you might just pull that one off again. Secretary of State, or Attorney General, rather, Todd Rokita. Todd Rokita, thank you very much for being with us today, sir. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Pat. It's an honor to serve, and great to be with you, and see you next time.
Yeah, and we hope that the next time we'll try to get him on here just as soon as we can. Going to slip out of here for just a little bit as we continue to move through the second hour of our program. This is Pat Miller with you live here on WOWO 92.3 FM and 1190 AM.
This is the Pat Miller Program on WOWO 92.3 FM and 1190 AM and on the WOWO app.
Hey, welcome back to the Pat Miller Program. Very thankful for Todd Rokita, Attorney General of the State of Indiana, making himself available for us in that previous segment. So let's talk a little bit, not to be macabre here, but let's talk a little bit about death. We had the funeral yesterday of the mayor of Fort Wayne, the longtime mayor of Fort Wayne, the longest serving mayor of Fort Wayne. We had Tom Henry, and he was laid to rest yesterday after his funeral. At the at his church there, the Cathedral of the Mass, which was held there at the Church of the Cathedral of the Immaculate Conception. And that was yesterday, following 2 days of lying in state in the Allen County Courthouse. So we had that funeral, and it says it's the final viewing. It was the final grieving and all that. You know, a lot of family members that he has, and our thoughts to them. And again, this is the mayor who, just in January, shared that his wife, Cindy, had passed away at the age of 67, that she had passed away because of pancreatic cancer. And they had 2 children, and we all kind of gathered around him emotionally, if not actually, to let him know, we stand with you, you're going through a very difficult time. And then, it wasn't, but it almost seemed like immediately, he came out and said, after he gave a press conference on an unrelated issue, and he said, oh, by the way, I'm also battling cancer. And that was almost incomprehensible to us. And he said, the prognosis is not good. He told us then that he was in stage 4. That caught me so off guard when he said that. And I didn't understand how it happened or why it happened so quickly. I wasn't exactly sure, still am not, when it was he found out that he had it. He might have been battling it the whole time that he was doing the final battling with his wife. But be that as it may, he let us know, just so you're aware, I'm in the final stages also. And so Tom Henry was laid to rest. Continued thoughts, continued prayers to the Henry family and all that they have gone through. Also, we had the announcement this week that O.J. Simpson had passed away. Now, I've not thought of O.J. Simpson in years. And when that was announced, I'm going to be honest with you, this wasn't my response, but it would probably be one of my first gut impressions. So what? O.J. Simpson died after he battled cancer. He was known originally. I mean, he was a guy that everybody liked. He was known for movies. He was known for his playing ball with the Buffalo Bills. Then he went in into where he did all those Avis rent-a-car commercials where you saw him running through the airport to make his connection, leaping over luggage. I mean, it was kind of amusing, but he was well-beloved. And then the shooting of his wife and her friend, who was from a local restaurant that she had been at, who had come to return some glasses to her. Now, was there more to it than that? Don't know. Doesn't really matter. But he shot them and killed them. Well, here's the nutty part of all this. An obituary was done by the New York Times. And in the New York Times, down in the obituary, there was a reference to Trump being released from prison instead of Simpson being released from prison. It read, long before the city woke up on a fall morning in 2017, Trump walked out of Lovelock Correctional Center outside Reno, a man free for the first time in 9 years. He didn't go far, moving into a 5,000-square-foot home in Las Vegas with a Bentley in the driveway. And supposedly, they went back in and they corrected it real quick. Look, somebody needs to talk to their shrink at the New York Times. These people, when you are so, I mean, somebody put that in there, okay? Even liberal NBC News president Breslau said, Freud lives. You know, the Sigmund Freud thing. Somebody wrote in Trump as a joke, maybe in office, and then they forgot to change it, or just because they thought they were being cute. But in 2017, Trump was not released from prison. So have fun, New York Times. Once again, you're proving that you're the gray old lady printing news that's not fit to read. Back with more after this break right here on the Pat Miller Program here on 92.3 FM, 1190 AM. Welcome back here as we continue through the 1 o'clock hour of the Pat Miller Program here on this Saturday. A good friend of a lot of people, a lot of veterans, a good friend with Honor Flight, great friend of mine, Adam Brower. Adam, thanks for being with us today.
Patrick, good afternoon. Thank you for having me. Thank you for all your support. What a wonderful community we have.
Well, I tell you what, you know, I've been on a flight since the first time I went, and it's now, was that how it was with you? I mean, how was it that you first got connected to Honor Flight?
Well, I love history. I have grandfathers that served, had a grandfather in World War II. Grandfather came right after World War II. And so when the World War II memorial was finished in 2005, both of them were gone by then and not able to enjoy the memorial. But I had to get involved in this Honor Flight program that was coming about.
And yeah.
It was still very infant stages at that point. But just like you said, it kind of gets in your blood, and you realize the smiles and the tears that you see at the end of the day make all those efforts worth it.
Yeah, since my very first flight, my veteran was Jake from Muncie. I've never been able to get away from it, and that was an odd flight because that was the flight that we went out and we came back through a private hangar. Because of all that had gone on with, this sequestration and all the rest. But this is going to be pretty close to a normal flight. If there's anything about them that are normal, you'll take off through the 122nd. You'll come back through the civilian side of the airport. And I'm hoping we get just a whole bunch of people out there to see you guys.
Right. You know, like you said, it's normal from a standpoint of we always say that if we can get to Washington in one piece, everybody's still healthy, we get a chance to see the memorials, spend some time reflecting at Arlington. If we can do those things, it's a successful day. And so that's what we're shooting for on the 24th, Wednesday, the 24th of April, flight number 46.
I was very proud of a couple of things last year, Adam. The Honor Flight, which was the Purple Heart, was near to my heart. I wasn't on the flight because of health issues and blah, 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 yada, yada. But Kayla was able to be on the flight. We had the Purple Heart recipients on that flight, every one of them. We had an enormous welcome home at the Coliseum when you guys got back. It was just unbelievable. The next flight scared me to death because I'm like, okay, this is just going to be a normal honor flight. Well, it might have appeared more normal to you and to me, but not to the veterans on the honor flight. And I'm like, please let us have some people out there to greet them at the airport. Please, please, please. We had a tremendous crowd at the airport.
Yeah, we sure have. And the airport's been a wonderful host to us. You know, for anybody listening, like we said, Wednesday night, April 24th, you're welcome to park in long-term parking.
Right.
Come inside the terminal, the whole area where the ticketing area is now, and then out into the parking lot. That's where the welcome home is going to be. And, you know, Pat, we've said it before, but you can read history. You can watch it on TV. I always say this is your chance to reach out and touch history and thank these veterans for their service. So we ask people to come out about 8 o'clock that night, the 24th, come park in long term, like I said. And we're hoping we're going to be in the air at that point in time as we've left Washington, D.C. And so we're hoping somewhere between 8 and 9 that we're going to be touching down in Fort Wayne. And then we'll get a chance to meet you all that are able to come out and see us.
And again, you'll be on American Airlines. You'll be on one of their A321s, which is actually the largest plane that comes into Fort Wayne. And we used to be on the A320. And then this one holds, I think, like 40 more people, which gave us the ability, I think, to up the number of veterans on the flight by 20. So that's amazingly cool because, you know, when you do four flights a year, if we had stayed in the A320, we would have to do five flights a year to get close to the same number of veterans that we now do on four. So with the two spring flights, the two fall flights, it's pretty amazing what we can do. Let's talk for a minute, because I know that the last couple of times I've paid attention to you guys when you go, you now see some things that we didn't necessarily see. I've not been on a flight. I don't know if you remember this or not. I've not been on a flight personally since COVID. When COVID started, and I was still recovering from my kidney transplant, and I was still recovering from the virus that I contracted after that. But starting with COVID, I've not been on a flight, so it's been a while.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. It has. You know, as we say, all of our plans are always tentative, variable, and predictably unpredictable, right? So we think we have an agenda that is kind of loose, and sometimes guardians and veterans ask us through the day, and we do tell them kind of roughly what the plan is, but we don't know exactly at at 2 o'clock we're going to be at a certain time frame, and some of that's
right.
Washington D.C. traffic, you know.
Yeah.
One of the wrinkles on this trip that is going to be new for us is that the very first stop of the day is actually going to be in Arlington.
Really?
There's a limitation in terms of number of honor flight buses that are allowed up at the Memorial Amphitheater. And the only availability for us was in the morning. So we're going to be laying a wreath about 11 o'clock changing.
Wow.
11:15 or so, we'll be laying a wreath. But that's our goal, to get out of Fort Wayne as quick as we can to make sure that we get on the ground, buses loaded, roll into Washington. But that shifts the schedule a little bit, gives us a chance to see some things in the afternoon we don't normally do. We're going to kind of go back and do about an hour of a driving tour, just seeing some of the backside of the Capitol and the Navy Memorial, Department of Justice, things like that that are on that side of Capitol Hill that we don't get a chance to do with some of our other trips. And then, of course, we'll come back and we'll see the rest of the mall, World War II Memorial, and the big three stop of Lincoln, Korea, and Vietnam. But, yeah, it's going to be an exciting day. We hope the weather, as usual, we hope it holds out well for us. But it's going to be a wonderful day. 85 veterans.
Yep.
We're very thankful to be able to take them.
Now the Navy Memorial, the Department of Justice, those are pieces that I've seen, but I've never seen them on an honor flight. And I know that we used to go by the statue of Iwo Jima. You still do that?
We are doing that. Yeah, we're going to have lunch on the buses at that memorial.
Oh, is that right?
We'll be able to enjoy their lunches there. Yeah, that'll be after we leave Arlington in this April flight. So we'll leave Arlington. We'll go have lunches available to people, and then they'll be able to walk around the Iwo Jima, the Marine Corps Memorial.
Oh, that's amazing. One of the things that really struck me about that memorial. And my stepfather had served in Iwo Jima, but one of the things that struck me was, and if you've never seen it, folks, it is a oversized, large statue right in the middle of a park of the gentleman raising the flag there on Iwo Jima, one of the most iconic pictures from that era of our military past. But as you drive around that statue, if you keep looking at it, it almost looks like the flag is going up. That they're actually standing, and you know it's not happening, but it sure looks like it's happening.
Right, it's like the way the angle of the flagpole is laying based on how the Marines and Navies or those guys are holding up the flagpole as the bus circles the memorial. Then it almost has that visual that it kind of plays a little trick with your mind because you know they're not actually pulling the rope to pull the flag up.
Yeah,
it does look like that.
This is the April flight. There'll be one in May, and then you're going to have two in the fall, correct?
That's correct. Yep, four this year.
Okay. Now, if somebody, and I don't know that we can get them on this year unless somebody is in poor health and they think they're not going to maybe live much longer and all that, what's the process right now, Adam, for somebody, hey, my dad served, my grandpa served, I served, maybe a guy at our church that everybody loves and he has no family, but he served. How do we start the process to get somebody on an honor flight?
Yeah, perfect question. And you're not committing to anything. That's what I like to start off with. But the easiest way is to visit our website. And if you Google Honor Flight Northeast Indiana, or it's hfnei.org,
right.
We have a apply now. We've got an application under the apply now section. And what we'll ask you is, when did you serve? What's your name? What, you know, how's a good way to get a hold of you? Address, phone number, those type of questions. What that does then is it just saves your spot in the database. And our database, our list of veterans, this question comes up quite a bit. Is people kind of think, well, you know, I signed up 15 years ago. Why haven't I gone now?
Right.
Or I signed up last week and you're having a trip next week. Can I still get in? What we do is we prioritize veterans by the order in which they serve.
Right.
So we don't have any World War II veterans left. We're still looking, but we've taken most of the World War II veterans from our area. But if there's a Korean veteran that signs up tomorrow, they're going to get prioritized ahead of a Vietnam veteran, not because their service means more, but because of their age. And the only way that list order would change from that how we have that sorting happen, the only way that would change then is veterans that are terminally ill or in very, very poor health, we'd like to talk with your doctors, and we'd put you in touch with our medical staff. And then, just like you noted, we would prioritize them and trying to find a way to get them to Washington as quick as we can. Or we could come visit you and almost do a digital honor flight with you and be able to share some stories with what you might be able to see. But again, it's visiting our website, hfnei.org, doing that apply now section. And that all it does is saves your spot in line, because we've got about 800 Vietnam veterans that are still on our list. And so if you sign up now as a Vietnam veteran, it's probably going to be about 3 or 4 years. But if you don't know that you want to go 2 years from now or 3 years from now, you can at least sign up. Like I said, it saves your spot. And then we can come back to you and get you scheduled and ready for your day when it comes.
Well, you know, I think the first flight I went on was the October 2014 flight. So it's been a while. But when I went on that flight, almost everybody on that flight was World War II.
Right.
And some were dual. My guy from Muncie, Jake, he was a dual. He was World War II and Korea. But now we've kind of blown through Korea, and you're kind of blowing through Vietnam now. And it's amazing how many. And we're not going to stop. I mean, you know, people say, okay, well, once you get through Vietnam, you're kind of done, right? We've got an awful lot of battles, an awful lot of veterans, an awful lot of people who served here and around the world, you know, basically in our, what I call our Dust Bowl wars. We're not going to stop until everybody that has served in that uniform has a chance to see their memorial.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and we do have 6 Korean veterans that are all over the age of 90 that are going with us on the 24th.
Wow.
And we have 73 Vietnam veterans. You know, and that community isn't getting any younger, you know, and I don't mean that to sound cliche or silly or anything like that. We've got 28, almost 30 veterans that are over the age of 80. Our average age is 80.
You know? Wow.
So we've like we talked about the size of the airplane and the staff that we have in place, and we're an all-volunteer organization, but we think we've found the sweet spot in terms of amount of trips that we can do and the size of the trip when we're there in Washington, because it's 1 airplane, 4 buses. We've got 189 people coming from Fort Wayne. And then you still have another, you know, 20, 30, 40 people that are meeting you in Washington to help with the logistics of the day, too.
Yeah, that's really amazing. I mean, the whole Honor Flight organization is absolutely incredible. Well, listen, I appreciate very much you being with us today. I may talk to you again in about a week just to make sure we keep reminding everybody that on the 24th, they need to be out there at the airport to welcome you guys home. They need to get there at about 8 o'clock in the evening, and that way they know they're in place when you guys land. And we'll give a terrific welcome home to some people, men and women, who have desperately earned it, and we want to make sure that they get that recognition. Adam Brower from Honor Flight Northeast India. Adam, as always, thank you very much for your time today, sir. I appreciate it.
Pat, thank you very much. God bless. Take care.
You bet. And we'll tell you more about Honor Flight as we continue to move forward. I'll be back in just a minute with our next segment. I appreciate Adam being with us. Honor Flight, listen, if you've never been to the airport to welcome them home, you'll never get over it. Back straight ahead right here on WoWo.
This is the Pat Miller Program on WoWo, 92.3 FM and 1190 AM, and at WoWo.com.
Hey, welcome back. It is the Pat Miller Program here on this Saturday as we continue finishing up our second hour today. Coming up in the next hour, 3rd District Congressman Jim Banks will be with us. And we just finished our conversation with Adam Brower from Honor Flight Northeast Indiana. I've always appreciated Adam. Adam was on Honor Flight before I ever even took a flight with them. An amazing young man. The whole board with Honor Flight, Kathy Berkshire and everybody else, they are really, really amazing people. And this is going to be a great flight. This is their first flight of this year. And here's what I'm really hoping. It's on the 24th, the last Wednesday of this month. Will you go with me? Let's go to the airport that night, the night of Wednesday the 24th. Let's get there at about 8 o'clock so that we're in place. So somewhere between 8:30 and 9, as that flight arrives from D.C. with 84 veterans on board, we're there to properly greet them. If you've ever been there for a welcome home, it is amazing. And this one promises to be the very same. Well, I'm going to teach you a brand new dance step from our nation's capital. I call it the Senate sidestep, where Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer is preparing to do away with a trial on the impeachment of Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. Look, Republicans want to highlight this administration's handling of the border, and Schumer has decided that's not going to happen. The Republicans impeached Mayorkas in mid-February, but the official transmission of the articles has been stuck in limbo because Congress has been busy trying to fund the government. Well, that's going to change when impeachment managers deliver the articles on Wednesday to Senate President Pro Temp Patty Murray, Democrat, Washington, swearing in senators as jurors a day later, and Schumer expected to dispense with them for good in pretty short order after. I don't know about you, that bugs me more than just a little bit. That one person, a guy, a senator, even though he is Senate Majority Leader, he can say, we're not taking it up. We're not going to deal with it. They are accusing. They have pulled you over. They said you run the red light. They hand you your ticket. That's your impeachment. That's been done. But then you have to show up in court, and then you have to go before the jury. That's what comes next in the Senate. That's how an impeachment works. House Republicans accused him of high crimes and misdemeanors, including willful and systemic refusal to comply with the law with his breach of the public trust. Both charges the Democrat or the Department of Homeland Security strenuously denies. Well, yeah, whatever. Look, here's the thing. Democrats have consistently bashed Mayorkas' impeachment, and they are largely in lockstep with whatever Schumer chooses to do. Do you know how we always say that this coming fall is one of the most important elections of our time? This one really is. We need to hang on to the majority in the House. In fact, we need to increase that majority in the House, and we need to increase the number of senators from the Republican side. We need to flip that House into the House that's a larger majority and flip that Senate into a majority for the Republicans. That's the only way that we're going to ever get anywhere on this stuff. Dick Durbin, not my favorite guy, the number two Senate Democrat from the state of Illinois, said in a heartbeat he would go against it. This is ridiculous. Even I think the House Republicans have lost their interest in it. You're not paying attention. These are supposed to be high crimes and misdemeanors. Really? Which one? They don't have any specifics. You're not listening and you're not reading. And don't worry about the fact that you don't think there are any specifics. Do you remember the two impeachments against Donald Trump? They couldn't even name a crime that supposedly he had committed. It wasn't even there. It wasn't even part of their DNA. That's amazing to me. But that's how you can go, you know, temporarily blind to whatever you want to become blind to. And you sit there and you pick and choose and you say, well, I don't see this one, but I see that one. Selective blindness. It's like when sometimes when you have selective deafness against your spouse. This is kind of the same thing. Pat Miller with you coming up right after the top of the hour. Third District Congressman Jim Banks. He'll be with us on the Newsmaker line. We'll talk to him here on WoWo 92.3 FM, 1190 AM.
Podcasts by Federated Media.